3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
Is there anything anybody loves more than agreeing with Tauscher?
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
I got a hunch this isn't going to be concise either.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
I would say that you are pretty easygoing. You're actually probably more easygoing than I am.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Well, there's no, you're not easygoing at all.
Hey!
On 100.5 ESPN, the ESPN app, and Wisconsin On Demand.
Monday edition. Let me get this straight. Tausch is protesting 565 Analytics Collective's decision on the Steinhoffel Sleepers of the Week, but he's not on the show. So is like Bulaga supposed to be his proxy and complain about the decision? It's not how it works, man. Edition. I don't know if I've ever seen, except maybe back in the old days when Tausch was in his prime and they were running the ball so effectively that they literally could tell the defense we're running 98 power and then still effectively block it up and gain big time yardage. I don't think I've seen anything since then like I saw yesterday. Edition. And the... Is Malik Willis going to be able to do this 2 weeks in a row if it comes down to this? I know that's getting ahead of ourselves. Let's just celebrate the W, which Matt LaFleur sure did with a little bit of profanity mixed in his speech. But now can they do it again? Because we know how the NFL works. You get 24 hours, and it's on to the next edition of Wilde and Tausch. On 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on WisconsinOnDemand.com and the Wisconsin On Demand app. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. Jesse Nelson is on assignment, so his cousin sub of the day in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios is Riley Yauch. Riley, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jason. Packers win. I'm just going to try and ignore the Badgers loss, but I'm doing well.
Struggled to put some points up offensively, which... Good thing Jesse's not here because Blue would be getting after him. And our cousin sub of the day for Tausch from his palatial estate... Mar-a-Lago in Florida. He is the eventual Packers Hall of Famer. He is our friend. He is Brian Bulaga. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Were you watching yesterday going, all right, I'm happy in retirement. I love being around Abby and the kids and getting up at 4 in the morning and still working out and looking like a tight end now instead of a tackle and going out to the farm and planting the orange grove, but man, that would have been fun to be playing on the offensive line yesterday. Did you feel that at all?
Yeah, I mean, a game like that is something that linemen dream of, right? Like, what was it, 53 attempts or maybe, you know, it was something I've never even been a part of. I was never a part of a game like that at Iowa, let alone my NFL time. Like, I don't even know what over probably 28 carries in a game in the NFL even feels like. But that looked fun. And it looked fun simply because of what you said to start this thing out. The Colts knew what they were going to do, right? Like, everyone in the building knew what was going to happen. And they did it anyway. And they did it with a very high rate of success. And it was... old school, like, you knew it was going to happen. Like, you saw the way the game was playing out in the first drive. Like, they're going to run the football, and they're going to continue to run the football. And we'll get into this as the show goes on, because there's obviously a lot of things to talk about, but it was the Colts didn't have an answer based on the personnel groupings that came in for the Packers. Like, the Packers and what Matt LaFleur did was show so many different formations and looks and got to base runs out of that. Like, just their staple runs out of formations that they haven't showed before. Like, and that made the Colts get into personnel groupings that didn't allow them to have their effective run guys in the game, and the Packers gashed them. And that's what, I mean, and that's what it came down to. And you saw the Colts kind of in the second half, or late in the first half, in the second half, go to five-man fronts and do things like that. And that's when you know you got them, when they're getting beat up so bad up front that now they're putting five down linemen in. They're running like the old Bears defense, like a 5-2, or, you know, like that old 4-4 defense. And, like, that's when you know you got them. And there's no better feeling as an offensive lineman when the defense has to do something totally out of character to stop something, and you know you got, and you're still doing it, and you're still continuing to just run the ball down their throat. Like, there's no better feeling. So, like, that was very fun for me to watch yesterday. I enjoyed it. It makes you appreciate good running backs, like Jacobs is. Like, that is a good running back. He is, like, I get he fumbled. Like, yeah, that stinks. But, like, that is a good football player. And it makes you appreciate having a guy like that on your side, because, yeah, the blocking was good, and I haven't gotten the All-22 yet to really look at it one at a time and decipher it from the correct angle. But it wasn't always clean. He made a lot of good cuts, a lot of good moves inside the hole to open space up for himself. I mean, he had to, right? When there's seven or eight guys that are, you know, coming downside a 10-yard area, he's going to have to make somebody miss at some point. And he did it, and he did it a lot. And, yeah, it makes you really happy that he's on our side. So, I mean, what a great game to watch.
The Packers beat the Colts 16-10. They rushed for 164 yards in the first quarter, which is the kind of total that you are very, very happy about in a game. They had it in a quarter. They had 237 yards at halftime, putting them on pace for a 474-yard rushing game against a defense that, as Brian said, knew what was coming and had given up the most rushing yards in the league the week before, 213 yards, to the Texans, who, again, the Packers had surpassed before halftime. We will get into this, because I want to give credit to Steno and LaFleur. They did a great job from my perspective, and you'll give a more detailed, knowledgeable perspective than I can give. But they ran, as you put it, base runs, but they gussied them up in a way with motions and personnel groupings and fake handoffs on jet sweeps and end-arounds that the Colts didn't know what hit them. And it's not like Gus Bradley is new at this. He's won a Super Bowl. Like, he's been a head coach. He was a top-flight defensive coordinator in the NFL, and they had zero answers. And how they didn't figure out that, hey, let's sell out to stop the run and dare them to beat us with this quarterback is beyond me. We will get into that coming up. I do want to ask you this before we get into any of the X's and O's, before we get to your positives and negatives, Brian's, Riley's, mine, and then yours, 844-770-3776, 844-770-3776. Matt LaFleur, And I didn't realize this was happening. Tausch tweeted, which, you know, he only tweets when he really has something he feels strongly about. I asked Matt LaFleur in the press conference, you know, you've won a lot of games around here. This has to be one of your favorites. And he said, yeah, absolutely. If you saw the video from the locker room after the game with the bleeps that were included because of the word choices he made. Is that common, by the way? Is there a lot of that in post-game win speeches? A lot of potty mouth?
You talk to any player or coach in the league that has played. Obviously, everyone's won a game at some point, right? Like, you know, unless you were the Lions that one year.
With Joe Barry as the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot that goes into a game week, and even more so this week for Matt LaFleur, Halfley, Stent, like, there was a lot that went into this game plan. And to have it come out the way it did and have both sides of the ball perform the way they did, there's a lot of emotion. And that doesn't shock me at all that that's the way he reacted. I mean, listen, you're going to catch those words no matter in an NFL building on a regular, but, you know, in a situation like that with the emotion flying, I'm shocked that it wasn't bleeped out the entire speech. Like, to be honest with you, I mean, I thought he actually kept his composure pretty good for given the situation.
You hear that in any NFL building, except apparently the Bears, who scrubbed all the profanity out of Hard Knocks this summer. So he was really fired up, and I thought, you know, that it was well deserved, because the fact that, and this is the thing that I wanted to ask you, is that this was a game. I mean, they were, if you pay attention to betting lines, they were underdogs at home to a team that is not going to be a playoff team this year, right? They are still in the rebuilding mode in Indianapolis. Their young quarterback certainly had his struggles yesterday. So they were home underdogs. That was the expectation of them with Malik Willis at quarterback, for them to not only win, but win the way they did, and for basically everything that they did game planning wise to work out. He has every right to be really proud of himself, of course, in LaFleur's way. He deflected it and talked about the players bringing the game plan to life, the assistant coaches formulating it. But this was a big win for him. This underscored that this is not just a coach who is a product of coaching Aaron Rodgers or coaching Jordan Love. Like, they got the job done. I am curious, though, when you win a game where no one thinks you're going to win, When you have adversity that you have to overcome, are those, obviously winning the Super Bowl, which you did, is the sweetest of the sweet. But are the games where you overcome adversity and shut up the doubters and do what they did yesterday, are those the games that mean the most to win? Because he was absolutely overjoyed yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, those types of games are the ones that really, like, you remember those, right? Like, obviously you remember a Super Bowl win, but you remember those wins and hard-fought battles that no one expected you to win. And I know this is a different scenario. It's early in the season, but it really, like, what I feel, like, how they felt in that locker room is how we felt in 2016 when we went on that bad skid. We lost, like, four or five in a row. And our essentially season was on the line on a Monday night in Philly. And we went out to Philly and beat the brakes off of them. I mean, we beat them. So we were not the favorites. They were playing well. We were not playing well. And we knew everything was on the line in that game. Like, this is it. Here's the season. Like, if we don't win here, we're done. And there's still like six games left or seven games left. And we rattled everything off in a row and won out from there. But the joy that was felt in that locker room and the excitement and kind of just the mood reminds me a lot of how I saw that locker room after the game, because you pour so much into it. Nobody thinks you can get it done. And I get it was early on in the season for the Packers, you know, just this, you know, yesterday it was early on and Jordan Love is coming back. Like, I get all that. But no one in the country, maybe besides the locker room, thought you were going to get it done. And you did. And you did it in a way that they haven't shown they can get it done in the past, right? Like, Matt LaFleur hasn't pulled out that type of game plan since he's been there. I mean, he hasn't done that. He had the ability to. He could have done that with Aaron. He could have done that last year with Jordan Love, but he hasn't. But he did it. So he's showing a way to win that he's never shown before. He took a risk, and it paid off. And like you said, that shows the type of coaches that are in that building and the type of players, because they can change, they can adjust, they can manage personnel on the fly. And that, to me, speaks volumes about kind of the operation they got going on. But listen, I said it last year when they were struggling, and a lot of people were after LaFleur, he can't do this. And they're like, I knew they have a good staff there. LaFleur's a really good football coach. Mm-hmm. Steno and Buck, like, these guys are really good coaches, and they have a great plan, and they have a great message to the players, and guys love the coaching staff. They buy into the coaching staff. It's just a matter of guys performing to a certain level, right? Like, and that's what it took last year. I mean, let's be real. Like, you can't say that Matt LaFleur changed something and did something completely different last year, and that's why they started playing well. No, the players started to play better. This is an example of the coaching staff changing something and going in a completely different direction game plan wise, and the players buying in, and it paid off. And that's when you know you got a really good group where the coaching staff can just, hey guys, I know this is what we've been doing, and this is what we've been practicing in preseason and camp and week one, but we got to go off script here. We got to change what we're doing, and this is what we're going to do this week. I need you guys to buy in. And they did, and the results are what they were. So, like, it is a complete team victory, what we saw yesterday.
Brian, we'll get into how the Packers did what they did in the running game, even without his all 22 access yet, because that has not been posted on NFL Plus. But he saw the game. He's got a pretty good idea, even without the eye in the sky, which don't lie, to tell us a little bit more about how they made this work. We will get to our one positive and one negative, and we will then get to yours. 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776. That is the ESPN Wisconsin talk and text line. You can send in yours via text now, or we'll get to some calls coming up. Brian and Riley and I will deliver our positives and our negatives next. It's Wilde and Tepsch. (404) 770-3776. We'll get to your positives and your negatives and questions if you have some for Brian Blaga Owl coming up. But let's get to our positives and our negatives first, in the immortal words of Dom Capers, as he used to like to say to start out his conversations with us. I'll start with the positives. Brian, your biggest positive was I'm going to take away the running game from you, because we're going to get into that a little bit more. So you're banned from the running game. What else you got?
I think it's the defense. I really do. I mean, I think everyone knew the defense had to step up and play well, right? Like, we weren't expecting the offense to go in and score 28 or more points. So the defense knew they had to limit the Colts, and they did, and they did it very well. As you know, Richardson, I think, is going to end up being a good quarterback in this league. Yes, he had his struggles yesterday, but he presents a lot of threats to a defense. Mm-hmm. Moves really well. He can get out of the pocket. He's got a strong arm, so he can make throws out of the pocket and on the move that not a lot of guys can do. So he presents a lot of threats, and they got a good running back, a good offensive line. So yeah, like, it was a big challenge, and the Packers defense, they played really well. This was a Colts team that put up a lot of points the week prior to the Texans, who we all watched last night, play really well against the Bears, had seven sacks, and you know, so they went against a good defense last week and scored a lot of points. So the potential was there. So I think how they played defensively and the style, like, we keep talking, like, the style of play, like, it is aggressive and it's good and it's getting turnovers, and they showed that again. Like, it's not a fluke that they took the ball away three times in week one. Took it away again, what, twice yesterday? So, like, this is a defense.
They had the pick at the end on the Hail Mary,
too. That's right. So this is a defense that is showing you that they're going to get the ball back for the offense, and it's based on what the offense does with it at that point, which, you know, I'm not going to get into negatives yet, but that's, you know, the defense is showing you what they're going to be about. So, like, to me, it brings me to be really excited about this defense still. Even after last week, I was maybe one of the ones that still was like, okay, let's not hit the panic button on this defense yet. Like, I still like what they're doing, and to me, that was my one positive.
Yeah, and I would echo that about the defense against Philly. I know it wasn't what they wanted, but A, they didn't play their guys in preseason, and B, Philly's got a pretty darn good offense, which I think you'll see again tonight on Monday Night Football against the Falcons. They'll be playing, I think they're at home at Lincoln Financial as opposed to in Brazil on that ice skating rink they played on south of the equator.
All right, Riley, what was your biggest positive?
So my biggest positive, I went in as a Maliever, I called it last week, Malik Willis. I thought he could get the job done.
Such a bad.
But I was really impressed with how he was able to manage the game. Obviously, LaFleur didn't ask him to do anything crazy, only threw the ball 14 times, wanted him to throw it 15 times, but obviously ball was a little slick after Josh Myers threw up on the football. But I was really impressed. He made the throws he had to make. He was able to put up a really good 50-50 ball to Romeo Doubs, and he didn't turn the ball over. I know he handed the ball off like 53 times, but no fumbled exchanges, no fumbled snaps. They had all that jet motion going back and forth. The ball, the cadence was on point. Overall, I thought Malik Willis played about a flawless game stepping in. I mean, Matt LaFleur in his postgame presser said that what he did, we aren't able to comprehend the difficulty of what Malik Willis did coming in 3 weeks ago, learning this offense, being able to step in for an injured Jordan Love. I'm just so impressed with what Malik Willis was able to do.
Yeah, you're right about that. It was impressive, and he deserves a ton of credit. He had started three games in Tennessee. The Titans won one of those three, but he didn't make the kind of plays, even though there were only a couple of them, like he made yesterday. I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit. You know, Josh Jacobs was advertised as a high-volume back. 32 carries, one shy of his career high. He had one 33-carry game in Oakland / Las Vegas and one 31-yard or 31-carry game with the Raiders. This was the second most carries he's gotten in a game. And I love Aaron Jones. You love Aaron Jones. You blocked for Aaron Jones. Great guy. Slasher. I don't know if he could have given him 32 carries in a game. I don't think that would have been putting him in his best position. And so this is not a critique on him. They're just different players. And having a guy like Josh Jacobs, yes, as Brian pointed out, the fumble was less than ideal. You go in and there, score there and make it 17-0. The Colts are lying down after that. It's done. They are mailing it in. So that is a critical mistake. There's no denying it. But he was really, really, really good. And as Brian pointed out, with that many guys in the box and with the
Colts, what could a second Trump administration look like?
Project 2024.
Well, I wasn't expecting a Trump ad in the middle of that. If you're
what?
Yeah, I was. Was I the only one that heard that?
No, I believe that went out. So I was clicking back to the YouTube stream, and there was another YouTube tab open. So I clicked the wrong one. Then it started a YouTube ad, and you know the political ads, they're all over the place right now.
Yes. Yeah. So my point being, it wasn't blocked up perfectly. And make sure you vote in the coming election. It wasn't always blocked up perfectly like Brian had said, and the point being that he got yards that weren't even necessarily there. And so he deserves a ton of credit. I know Tausch would tell us that was low-hanging fruit. All right, Brian, your biggest negative from this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think early on we saw it, and it's something that showed itself again from last week, is the penalties.
Yeah,
the offensive penalties from week one to week two are still there. And those have to start getting cleaned up, because we're seeing that become a detriment in these drives for the offense, right? Like, if the run game wasn't so good yesterday, I mean, we get the couple holding penalties in a row, then, or whatever it was, and then Jacobs breaks off like a 25-yard run and gets the first down right back. Like, you can't continue to rely on, you know, getting penalties and gaining all that yardage back. It's just not realistic in the NFL. So for me, that was the negative. And, like, I guess I have two, because it was also something that showed itself last week as well in week one, was the inability to cash in on turnovers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you need to be able to score touchdowns when you turn the football over. Week one, 9 points off of 3 turnovers. To me, that decided the game. I think this week it was only, I think it was a touchdown, I think. Maybe it was 7 points off of 2. Maybe it was only a field goal. I can't remember exactly what they did after the first turnover. Maybe someone can check me there.
I will have that for you momentarily.
Fact check me since we're in political season. but to me, those are the two things that stand out to me. Because, like, again, as we get going in the season and we start getting in these games that are against playoff-type teams, and we saw it against Philly, they're going to be a playoff team. We'll just call it what it is. Those are the fine margins that you start to see separating teams is, yeah, the turnover margin is big, but if you don't do anything with the turnover margin and you get outscored on the opposing team's turnover margin, mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's not a recipe to win in the long term. So, which is correctable in my opinion. The whole, like, the penalties are completely correctable. Like, those are holding calls that it's position, it's technique. Those can be changed. I thought the one on, what was it, Bo Melton, the holding call.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a bad call. Like, to be honest with you, that was junk in my opinion, but it is what it is. It still gets called. So those things are correctable. And taking advantage of turnovers is something that's also correctable, but, like, that's something that just has to be done. They got to be cleaner when they get the ball back from turnovers, and those would be my two.
So they had 3 interceptions. We will take one of them off the board for cashing in purposes, because it's the Hail Mary that Evan Williams intercepts to end the game. The other two, one ends in Josh Jacobs' fumble at the goal line. The other ends in a missed field goal from Braden Narveson, which may be a little bit of foreshadowing.
So it was zero.
Yeah, which may be a little foreshadowing of a negative coming up here. All right, Riley, what's your negative?
Alrighty, so I don't want to steal...
Other than playing YouTube commercials in the middle of the show.
Obviously, that is... that would be my number one. But secondly, Bulaga and actually Tucker and Wausau had the same thing on the turnovers. He said, I don't know, I'll have to fact check him on this, but we only have 6 points on 9 turnovers all season.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Is kind of insane when you look at it, so turnovers definitely a big negative. But the other one that I had written down was just the inability to close out the game. Like you mentioned, Josh Jacobs fumble on the goal line. Like, the Colts are probably done. If you get up 17-0, you're just running it down your throat. You can do whatever you want to them. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to be able to recover. It's going to take a Herculean effort, which they obviously didn't have yesterday. And second, you alluded to it, Braden Narveson missed field goal. You go up 19-10, game over. They can try and march down the field, but the threat's over. That's it. And the Packers just weren't able to close out the game. I think you could look at that as a bigger negative with Braden Narveson. Now he's missed a field goal in each of the first 2 games. Not ideal. I think that is also fixable. I'm liking what I'm seeing so far from the Narv dog, but I feel like the Packers, you got to be able to close these games out. You got to be able to step on the throat and just, like, take their will. And I feel like the Packers haven't shown the ability to do that yet.
So my negative is the pass rush. And then we'll get back to the, I'm sorry, what'd you call him? The Narv dog?
The Narv dog.
The pass rush, I understand that they are facing two mobile athletic quarterbacks and you have to rush the passer in an adjusted manner, right? You have to be disciplined. You have to try and make sure that you're not leaving lanes for him to take off and run. I understand that. And that is a mitigating factor, but they still are not generating enough pressure. Like, those guys are still sacked at times, and they just, for a group that we were expecting to wreak havoc, they haven't done that yet. Now, again, even giving them some grace on the types of quarterbacks and the approach they're taking with those quarterbacks, you would like to see more pressure. The question I have for Brian about Narveson before we shift gears and we take your positives and negatives, 844-770-3776, is this. What at this point is the difference between the Narv dog and Anders Carlson? He's basically Braden Carlson / Anders Narveson, right? Because the concern about Anders Carlson was that he was going to miss one kick a game, right? I mean, if we're being honest, it's not like he was, you know, Shankopotamus guy who was hitting 48% of his field goal attempts. Like, it was that, like clockwork, whether it was early or late, sometime during the game, he was going to miss a kick. 10 of the last 12 games last season, he missed a kick. He loses his job after he is perfect all game long in the preseason finale and then pushes a 32-yarder wide right. The whole issue with him was, which kick is he going to miss and how's it going to cost us? And Narveson is fun, man. He's a little, you know, he's a rookie. He's all full of energy and positivity, and he is a fun guy to talk to. But Brian, how is he different at this point than Anders Carlson? They both have strong legs. They both are young kickers that have to work through their inconsistency. But one kick a game can be the difference between winning and losing if you're going to miss one kick a game.
100%. And listen, I don't want to jump on this kid right off the get, right? Like, and I get it. He's missed two kicks, two games.
Right. He's been really good. And in fairness to him, I'm not saying they should cut him at all. That is not my argument.
No,
I'm just saying it's no different than what you just dealt with.
No. And you're right. And that's not just saying it. That statistically is what we're talking about. Like, it's statistically he's missing a kick a game, and that's just the facts of it. I think if that trend continues in the next 3 weeks, I think Goody will be looking back at the veteran that we let go. What was his name again?
Greg Joseph.
Joseph. I think that may be another. He'll get another look. I really do, because I don't think you can continue to miss one a game and keep, like, listen, we're watching field goal kickers bomb these things from 58, 59 yards a game here, like, with ease and making them, like, last night, the Chiefs, like we're seeing these kickers just super accurate from 50 out. And if we continue to have a kicker miss one a game from in that 40 to whatever it is range, like, that's very alarming, and it's going to be alarming for Goody, especially what the team experienced last year in the playoff game, the final game. So, like, I'm not, like, saying that we need to move on, this kid can't, like, I'm not saying that, because, like you said, I think there's potential in him, and I get he's young, and Carlson was young last year, too, and I think people gave him a lot of time to see how it would turn out, and it turned out the way it did at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure. I am not sure Green Bay is going to give him that same time that they gave Carlson. And if there is a kicker available that they like Joseph or if they want. I don't know if they would go back to Carlson, but if he's available, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they're going to, I don't think they're going to have the same patience is my, is essentially what I'm getting to. And for reasons that are completely valid, because you said it, 3 points in a game could cost you the game. And that, you know, last, like you look at yesterday, a perfect example, you make that field goal, it's out of reach, it's out, it's game's out of sight, out of mind. That Hail Mary doesn't even matter. If they complete it, they got the 2-point conversion, does not matter because the ball game's over. So, yeah, I'm not completely done with them yet. I'm not, because, again, we saw what happened last year, and we gave, you know, Carlson some grace and let him work his thing out and figure it out and figure out the type of kicker he is. It's just not going to be the same ball game this year. And that's why I'm hoping a little more consistency starts to show itself throughout the next 3 weeks, and we're 100% on all kicks. And I'm not saying kicking's easy. I know guys are making it look easy right now, right? Like, there's some kickers that are making this thing look easy. It's not easy. And as much as Homer says it's easy, it's not easy. But yeah, I would like to see a little more consistency, and that's where I'm at with it.
I think, personally, it's even tougher when you got a guy like the kicker for the Commanders. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he was, I don't think he was on an NFL roster a couple weeks ago, and then he comes in and makes 7 field goals in a game, even though most of them weren't from that great of a distance. The ability to make 7 field goals and literally win your team the game, the only score in the game, that's something that doesn't really seem like the Packers have had the past few years.
Yeah, that was Austin Siebert, who had been in camp and had lost a competition. I don't know if it was with the Jets or who it was with, but he was on the street, or as Tausch likes to say, in his home, and then got the call when the Commanders, who had traded for Cade York from the Browns, then and given up a draft pick for him, then cut him because he missed kicks in the opener. That's the thing you don't want to be doing. You do not want to play kicker roulette. You don't want to do it. So I'm not, again, advocating in any way for them to move on from Braden Narveson. And by the way, the kicks do matter, right? I mean, in the Philadelphia game, you get the ball back at the end. Now, maybe it forces Philly to go for a touchdown when they're at the one-yard line on fourth down instead of kicking the 21-yard field goal. But you make that field goal, you are up one when they go down and kick that field goal to push the lead to 5. And then you are now having to, you don't have to go get a touchdown to win. You can go kick a field goal to win. So the miss he had earlier in the game in Brazil did matter. But again, I would be patient. I don't have a problem with him at all. I'm just saying that it feels a little like deja vu all over again. That's all. And he has to get that fixed in order to be able to be counted on, because there's going to be a game, and it could be as soon as Sunday, in which he's going to have to kick a game winner. And maybe he does. He did that in preseason from 59 yards. So we'll have to wait and see. All right, those are our positives and our negatives. Now we get to yours. 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776. Your positives, your negatives. The Packers beat the Colts and rushed for about 1 million yards. Well, okay, not 1 million, 261. But it felt like 1 million. We'll get to that. Plus, during the 10 o'clock hour, Brian's going to break down why they were able to do what they did on the ground. So you're going to stick around for that as well, even though he doesn't have his all 22s yet. That's all coming up. More Wildy and Tausch straight ahead. Stick around. Let's get straight to the phones and your positives and negatives. Let's start in Stevens Point with Joe in Stevens Point. Joe, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. Hey, guys. How you doing? Long-time listener, first-time caller. Because I want to just say this one thing. Can Packer fans finally just breathe for a second and not overreact? Malik Willis showed us he's a serviceable quarterback. He's not going to go out and win you a game. That's the positive. Like, so now we don't have to rush back to visiting, oh, how hard do we have to push Jordan Love back onto the field? He got us a win. Let's all just breathe for a minute. The negative, for as much as I've heard about this Jeff Hafley defense and these guys are going to pin their ears back and go, I agree with you, playing two athletic quarterbacks is a different ball game per se. Mm-hmm. But for one, there haven't been enough plays where I've looked at the game and been like, those guys can go get it if we absolutely need to. And I agree, you know, coming from the standpoint of an athletic quarterback, you have to stay disciplined. But I haven't quite seen that play yet where I'm like, oh, they can go get it. Just tell them to go get you the ball. They'll go get you the ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Look, I'm going to reserve judgment. I think it's a, obviously, because I brought it up too, Joe, I think it's a very fair point about the pass rush. And we will see if that changes. Look, Will Levis is certainly capable of moving and getting outside the pocket too, but he is not as good at it as Jalen Hurts is, and he's not as good of a mobile quarterback as I believe Anthony Richardson is going to be. Again, he moved a lot, but he didn't look like he had a great plan for when he moved. Like, the really good quarterbacks don't run to run. They run to set up a better throw off platform or off schedule. And he is still, this is only his sixth start, so I'm not going to crush Anthony Richardson either. So I'm going to hold judgment on the pass rush. But it is a negative, and it's a fair one, and I'm glad you brought it up. Now, Brian, let me ask you this about Malik Willis, because, and thanks for the call, Joe. We appreciate it, and welcome to the show. Good job choosing the day that Tausch is off to call when Brian's on instead for your first call. My question for you, Brian, is this to Joe's point about Malik Willis, because I am a Malik Willis supporter. I feel like he got a raw deal in Tennessee. He got drafted by a GM who wanted him to sit the way Jordan Love did. Remember, John Robinson, his best friend in scouting is Brian Gutekunst. He wanted to do with Malik Willis what Brian was doing with Love. And then he gets fired in December. New GM comes in, drafts Will Levis, which is not a Valentine to Malik Willis. That is a, we think you suck. We drafted another guy a year later in a round earlier than we drafted you. We don't want you. That's what it says. So then he basically has a wasted year last year. And then he gets traded, and now he's got his fourth offensive system in 3 years. My question, Brian, is obviously the game plan worked yesterday because they ran the ball so flippin' great. If Tennessee does a better job of that, are we having a different conversation about Malik Willis a week from now because they have had to make him do more than he had to do yesterday, and we find out whether he's up to the task or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think next week will be a telling sign, right? Because I think Tennessee's got a pretty good defense. Again, I haven't watched them much to be honest with you, so I don't really know much about them. I know they got some good players, especially some really good interior players. You know, I was able to catch a little bit of the Jets game yesterday as I was on my NFL ticket, so I was able to pay attention to a little bit of the Jets game, and they played the Jets tough, and the Jets, they obviously have Aaron, but they have a good rushing attack, right? Mm-hmm. And they kept the game pretty close, and that's with Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback, and that's a really good quarterback, and, you know, we're talking, and I'm not, this isn't ragging on Malik Willis, but he's not Aaron Rodgers, so, like, it'll be interesting to see the conversation we're having next week if Jordan Love is not ready and how Matt LaFleur prepares this team to go play a defense that, interior-wise, they got some pretty good football players and you know, they're going to be trying to stop the run again, and that's going to be the name of the game is how can we limit the Packers' run game. And I think we can make more of a judgment on Malik Willis at that point. But as of right now, we have to give him his due credit. I mean, he came into a situation with not a lot of time, and he did what was asked of him. He made some really good throws. He made good decisions. He didn't turn the football over or do anything crazy like that. So I think we have to give him his credit, and we should be able to, you know, expect that he continues to play at the same level or even better. That's the way I'm looking at it. I mean, he showed us what he can do. They won the game. I get they ran the ball a lot. They're going to run the ball a lot next week, too, if Jordan Love doesn't play. Even if Jordan Love does play, they may still run the ball a lot. But my expectation for Malik Willis is just to potentially get a little bit better. Like, there should be no reason why I think he's going to take a step backwards. I think another week of game planning, another week of being comfortable in the system, we can expect him to make, I'm not saying a huge jump or anything like that, but another potentially small step forward and see some more improvement. So, he can win. I don't know if he can outright win us a game by throwing the ball 40 times and winning a game that way. But he certainly showed yesterday that he can control the offense, take care of the football, and not lose the Packers a football game, which is really important as a backup quarterback, that you don't go in there and lose a game for your team. And he proved that he can manage this thing, keep the offense moving in the right direction. And so to me, next week, I hope he maybe gets a little bit more of what we see from Jordan Love. I'm not saying he is Jordan Love, but I'm just saying, like, maybe some more basic dropbacks and see how he throws the football and try to make the Titans not be one-dimensional in stopping the run, and maybe we see a little bit more. But again, I'm not putting anything ahead. We'll see how this week pans out with Jordan Love and how he's feeling and all those types of things. So take this one day at a time here.
We'll get to your texts. We'll get to more of your calls, too. So if you're on hold, stay there with your positives and negatives. We'll get to those coming up. 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776. Brian Bulaga and Riley Yauch are our cousin subs of the day. Cousin subs, we believe in better. We'll get to more of your positives and more of your negatives next. It's Wilde and Tausch. All right, let's get to another call before we kick off the 10 o'clock hour, and then we'll get to more of your calls and texts. 844-770-3776. And then the doctor of football, which when I joined the Homer Hour, then I'm now the professor, which, again, I don't know the difference. Brian Bulaga knows a hell of a lot more than I do, though. So take those titles as you wish with Uncle Homer, but I do enjoy our Thursdays together. All right, let's go to Jeff in Milwaukee next. Jeff, good morning. What are your positives and negatives, buddy? How you doing?
How are you guys doing? Thanks. You guys have had a great discussion today, so that's been awesome.
So, it's all Brian. He's the best.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you're such a you always go for the underdog, Jason. Malik Willis, you're right there batting with him. I love it.
I am.
So, yeah. So here's, before the season started, I called in and I said, the key to this season, their overall success, is going to be their offensive line. And so my positive for the game is their offensive line played great. I would say it was a phenomenal, really, really strong performance by them. My negative is on the defense, but as opposed to what you guys have been talking about, my biggest concern about their defense is their run defense. This is now two games where, and granted, it's been two good backs, but if they don't stop the run this year, they're not going. They're not going to be able to finish anything off. They're not going to be able to get off the field. And I don't mean to drill down and blame one person, because run defense is very, very it's a cumulative effect. But I'll tell you, if Quay Walker doesn't start to make some plays, he's entering like we overdrafted. He's now in his third season, and you know what? The book on him coming out of college was great athlete. He lacks instincts and intelligence. And you need both those things to play linebacker in the NFL. It's just huge. And he has not shown that. So my biggest concern, not only for this game, but moving forward, is going to be the run defense. And then the final thing is, I agree with both of you. If Malik plays and starts this Sunday, he's going to have to beat him with his arm, because you know for sure Tennessee is not going to let our running game beat them. You won't. They won't. They're that's what they're going to say. Prove it. And I wouldn't be surprised if LaFleur is counting on that, and in the first series they throw a bomb to one of their wide receivers. Yeah. At any rate, you guys, thanks so much for the show. Those are my positive and negatives, and thanks very much.
Let's get the great point, Jeff. I let's talk a little bit more about the run defense before we start the 10 o'clock hour, Brian. They are two good backs. Jonathan Taylor, really good back. Saquon Barkley, really good back. Both of them over 100 yards in the first two games. You used the phrase when we were learning this defense, stopping the run on the way to the quarterback. Well, so far they're not really on their way to the quarterback, and they're not stopping the run. Why?
Yeah, I mean, I think let me start kind of agreeing with what you said early on. Like, these are two good backs. Like, and you look at what this last game, 12 for a buck three. Yeah, the average doesn't look great, right? It's almost 10 yards a carry, had a long of 29. So, yeah, I'm like, listen, if they give up 100 yards rushing average, but, you know, they only allow 10 points a game, like, there's worse things in the world that can happen, right? Like, I'm not as concerned about that. I'm more concerned about, like, what happened week one. Those are the type of rushing games that I don't really – or, like, those big chunk plays and just completely wide-open gaps and guys not fitting in the right spaces. Those are the ones that concern me more. I thought they made improvements from week one to week two in the rush defense. Do we want to see that under 100 yards, closer to like 80 yards or even less? Yes, we do. But this is a process. It's a process to get your run fits correct while still being super aggressive and penetrating up the field. Like, it is a different style and feel than read and react and two gap and things like that. There are nuances to jetting up the field and then finding the running, like, and finding the running back, feeling where you're at in space, reading offensive linemen. Like, it's a different feel than what they're all used to. So while we do want improvement from the two games, right, you don't want to see Taylor get, like I said, 103 from 12 carries or what Saquon did the week prior. No, but I feel like there was improvement from week one to week two. But it's going to take them a little while. And he did mention something that I believe needs to happen. And I think Quay needs to start figuring out these run fits a little bit better. It needs to be a little bit cleaner, because there are times where I feel like, just from watching the sideline tape, obviously, like I said, I haven't seen the L-22, he's playing a little more laterally than I would like to see, then, and not downhill, right? Like, he is a big, strong, aggressive linebacker. Like, seeing his pads go sideways and not straight downhill when attacking offensive linemen or filling gaps is doing him a disservice, because of the way he is, how physical he is. He's a big linebacker. Like, I want to see that guy's shoulders square and attacking downhill, and he just seems like he's going a little lateral right now. And that's kind of the point earlier I made, that it takes a little bit of time to get these run fits and getting comfortable with where the D linemen are going to be, potentially where the weak points could be after, you know, the ball snapped and the running backs made his first few steps to a certain side, and where the cutbacks are going to be. Like, these are all things that they work out, and I'm not jumping off ship yet. Because, like I said last week, I'm not doing it yet. But I do think consistency from the linebacking group needs to improve. Because if you look at these defenses run throughout the league, the stars of the show in the pass rush are obviously the D linemen because of the freedom they're given. But the run game is always the linebackers. You look at the 49ers and Fred Warner and those guys. You look at the Houston Texans, and I think his name is I forgot the line that threw the punch last night. He's with the 49ers. Shaier. I can never pronounce his name properly.
Yeah, his name should have been pronounced kicked out of the game, but that didn't happen.
Yes. Yeah, but he's that type of linebacker that's aggressive downhill. They're filling gaps. You look at the Jets and those two linebackers, Quincy, like those dudes are downhill and they're aggressive in the run game. And that's who the star of the show is in the run game, is those linebackers, because the D linemen are supposed to be eating up blocks so that those guys can roam free, and it's how they fit. So I think that's going to improve as this season goes on with Quay and whoever is running mate is next to him, that those things are going to improve. Those things are going to take time. And I know people are impatient with it because they saw it last year and they didn't like it. And it's a new scheme and we were told things would be corrected and things will be corrected and it takes time. But those are all feel things. Like, these aren't like you're supposed to be in the A gap. That's where you need to be, quite. Like, it's not that way. Mm-hmm. Gaps move as offensive linemen moves and pictures change and where you need to fill. It's a moving picture. And it's hard to just like pinpoint and be like, he needs to be in this gap. Well, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I understand it pre-snap, but this is post-snap and things are moving and 300-pound bodies are moving laterally and gaps appear. Or if one of our D linemen potentially gets, you know, blocked cleanly, it opens up a different space. So I'm not overreacting to it. Does it need to get cleaner? Yes. And I think Quay is a good football player. I really do. So I'm not in the category of saying this guy is not going to work out or he's not, like, I think he's a good football player and he's shown that. I just think the consistency with where he is when it's time, like in, as the picture's changing, I think that needs to be a little more consistent. I think we're going to see the run game improve. I really do. I'm confident in it.
Yeah, I just think that, and it's the expectation game that Tausch always talks about, and the expectation game, Quay Walker is not Blake Martinez. He wasn't drafted in the fourth round. He was the 22nd overall pick, and your expectations are different from, just like your friend AJ Hawk had to deal with, from being the fifth overall pick. Like, it's just, it's different. And yeah, he's a great athlete. He's got length. He's got speed. He's got everything you want, but he doesn't make plays. I mean, other than the pick six that he had in Chicago in the opener, how many plays has he made in 2+ years now? Not many. And I understand fans' frustration. I'm not writing him off either. Let me be very clear. But the clock is ticking. And the this is supposed to be a scheme that is more conducive to him. Him and Wyatt both. The idea of think less, react more. Okay, we're only two games in. Wyatt had a sack yesterday. We will give them some grace too. But at some point, the expectation game kicks in. And I understand why fans feel the way they feel. The guy you were trying to think of, by the way, was Azeez Al-Shaair, who definitely should have been ejected yesterday, but wasn't. And
yeah,
if you have replay, how do you not use it to do that? No, they don't have that. That's not allowed in the rules. All right, we need to get to the 10 o'clock hour. I know there's a bunch of you on hold. Riley is putting you in your pecking order. We will get to you on the other side when we kick off the 10 o'clock hour. Want to remind you, you can take it to the bank that you're always going to get great insight from Bulaga, and you can take it to the bank that you're always going to get great customer service from Associated Bank. Top customer service in the industry. They've got all kinds of awards, including a recent J.D. Power Award, to prove it. They've also got Packers checking. You can get your Packers debit MasterCard, get your discount at the Packers Pro Shop, and that early pay program where you'll have access to your money up to 2 days early with your direct deposit from your employer. So go to AssociatedBank.com to find out more. Boy, it's just like having Bulaga on the show on a Wednesday. We don't start the 10 o'clock hour. It's almost 10:15. We're consistent around here. We'll do that in 2 minutes. It's Wilde and Tausch.